Hello, I'm Tom Bowers. This is 0454, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0454. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Dr. Robin Burke, Managing Director of Analytic Decisions Squared. She's talking about Facebook's issue with your data and why you should be concerned.
Let me give you an example of something that most of us were too naive to realize was a possibility. I tend to keep location turned off on my phone. It turns out that Facebook and other big data companies can figure out where I am anyway. And that's because I loaded the Facebook app on my phone, and it can access operating system information like what's the closest cell phone tower.
Bob DiRigo-Jones, host of Let's Be Fair, that you hear each week on this program, is a guest this time around, talking about unnecessary license laws.
Which of these people must do the most to fulfill the occupational requirements imposed by the state of Michigan for getting a license? A chef who prepares your food, the auto mechanic who installs your brakes, the EMT who can save your life, a painter who makes your house look nice, an airline pilot who flies you to see your family or friends, or the barber who simply cuts your hair.
The answer to that quiz to come. And Tessa Polder, who runs a bamboo straw company called Suck On That in Cambodia. How did the company start?
I was already living in Cambodia. I was working for a fair trade company, and living here, I was just very much confronted by how much plastic waste is around us, because in Cambodia, the plastic waste management system is quite undeveloped. So it was really when I was walking down the beach here that it was the turning point for me. I saw a lot of plastic straws lying around on the ground, and that's when I thought to myself, that's very unnecessary. I have to do something about it.
And we have lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0454 was Tom Bowers, a voice artist, musician, and podcaster. You can hear him as one of the participants on The Spoon, which is a fine, fine show. And he's also the producer and host of Super Enthusiast Radio, which is also a fine, fine show. You can find Super Enthusiast Radio, by the way, at superenthusiastradio.com. Check it out. Wads of fun. Thank you very much, Tom, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A woman was thankful to be reunited with her boyfriend and her cat, who were both stuck up in a tree. Nicole Ashikis of Norfolk, Virginia, said that she woke up and wanted to feed her cat, but her pet was nowhere to be found. Nicole began searching for the cat and discovered that it had climbed about 50 feet up the tree. Nicole believes her cat was up there for about a day and a half. She called PETA and Animal Control to ask for help, but they do not have services to rescue animals from trees. The worried cat owner's boyfriend, Jeremy Peterson, decided to take matters into his own hands. He climbed up a ladder, but then he too got stuck in the tall tree and was able to get back down. The couple called 911 and firefighters came to their rescue. They took Peterson down first and then turned their attention to the cat and brought it to safety. Now, those of you who regularly listen to this show, you know how I feel about cats. They're little pieces of evil. Yes, plotting against mankind. I have no doubt that this kitty was trying to lure humans into that tree in the guise of rescuing it, only to plot their demise perhaps with a well-placed shove.
Everything's clear now.
Oh, it's all pretty clear. The New York Police Department arrested 59-year-old Gregory Price of Brooklyn after catching him in the act of committing a robbery with a glue gun. Price has been charged with robbery and criminal possession of a weapon. Shouldn't that be criminal possession of a crafting tool? Anyway, according to the police investigation, Price used black tape to make a glue gun look like a real firearm. Price is accused of going into a 7-Eleven in Manhattan, pointing the glue gun at the cashier and demanding cash. On another occasion in Brooklyn, Price approached a woman who was driving a car and then robbed her. He managed to flee the scene before police arrived. Most recently, police followed Price and watched as he attempted to rob the cashier at VV Bubble Tea in Brooklyn. Police then entered the store and arrested him. Well, clearly he is adhering to a criminal lifestyle, but now he'll simply be stuck in prison. When it comes to Taylor Swift, she has some admirers who put the fanatic in fan. On April 4th, 26-year-old Bruce Rowley allegedly robbed a bank in Ansonia, Connecticut, and took the loot to Taylor's house in Rhode Island, where he told police he threw some of the cash over the fence to impress her. It seemed he wanted to propose to her, according to the Ansonia Police Department spokesperson. On April 28th, 23-year-old Justin Lilly, who was described as homeless, was arrested for allegedly trying to climb over a wall at Swift's Beverly Hills, California home, and ignored demands by security guards that he leave. On April 14th, 38-year-old Julius Sandrock, who told police he suffered from depression, bipolar disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and manic episodes, was arrested, charged with felony stalking after he allegedly showed up at the same home wearing a mask and rubber gloves and had a knife, rope, ammunition, and some masks and gloves in his car. And on April 20th, 22-year-old Roger Alvarado was arrested inside Swift's New York City townhouse and charged with stalking, burglary, criminal mischief, and trespassing. He allegedly climbed up a ladder, broke a window, went in, took a shower, and got into Swift's bed to take a nap. Swift was not present at any of these incidents. Wow. Is there something about Swift's music that brings out the crazies in people? Are they getting secret messages by playing her songs backwards or something? Or do they just not listen to her lyrics? You go talk to your friends, talk to my friends, talk to me. But we are never, ever, ever, ever getting back together. Take a hint, guys. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police say a New York man who was wanted for masturbating on a subway train was arrested. And no, before your imagination runs away with you, he wasn't caught in the act. Instead, he was apprehended after officers saw him ripping down wanted posters of himself. The photo of Costa Kolacki was taken earlier this month by a rider who was in the same subway car. The rider handed the photos over to police, who made them into wanted posters. The 61-year-old suspect was arrested Friday when officers saw him in a Brooklyn station tearing down the posters. He's charged with public lewdness. You know, they always return to the scene of the crime, don't they? He can spend most of his free time now singing Chuck Berry's biggest hit. Go ahead, Google it. Okay, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? What does Facebook really know about you? How is your data being used, and what can you do about it? We put those questions to Dr. Robin Burke, who is the Managing Director of Analytic Decisions Squared and consults on data analysis, machine learning, AI, and their uses. She's also the author of Check Your Connections, How to Thrive in an Uncertain World. Robin joins us on the line right now from New York. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. One of the things I noticed in a comment you said pertaining to Facebook, you said, Facebook has betrayed the naive expectations of its users by exploiting social relationships for profit. And I want to talk about the first part of that statement, and that is naive expectations. Describe what you mean by that, because I think I totally agree there.
Well, let me give you an example of something that most of us were too naive to realize was a possibility. I tend to keep location turned off on my phone, you know, so I'm not doing the GPS thing unless I really need to go to Google Maps. It turns out that Facebook and other big data companies can figure out where I am anyway. And that's because I loaded the Facebook app on my phone, and it can access operating system information like what's the closest cell phone tower, or what is the IP address of my internet server, both of which will reveal with fair amount of detail where I am.
Okay, so obviously you are somebody who is very technically savvy when it comes to the data that is out there about you, and yet you say even you can be duped to a certain degree. Having said that, are we going overboard in our righteous indignation against Facebook? Isn't a certain amount of it our own responsibility?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the usual phrase is, if you didn't pay for it, you are the product.
Yes.
What we give Facebook and Google and others in exchange for their services is our information. The information we actually type in, and also our behavior when we're interacting with them.
So now that this is all big news, it's everywhere, what should we do differently outside of the knee-jerk reaction of, oh, well, I'm just leaving Facebook?
Well, here's the thing about deleting Facebook. Even if you got rid of every piece of data they're currently storing on their servers, you can't prevent other people who had already purchased that data from using it. And you also can't force their artificial intelligence, their machine-learned algorithms, to forget about you. So be aware that, yes, you can detach from Facebook, but it won't undo what has been done.
Okay, so let's go on that theory. It won't undo what's been done, but let's say someone has decided to leave Facebook, and that's not something I'm suggesting, but just for the purposes of this argument, let's say that people leave Facebook. What possible damage can my information out there be to me if I'm not even using the platform from which it was originally taken from?
Right. I think the answer to that, the way to understand the answer to that is to understand two things. One is that there is a huge increase in the amount of data that you and I have shared over the last few years. And at the same time, there has been a maturation of some very sophisticated new machine learning approaches. And when you put those two together, what you get is a critical mass of computing capability, of software capability, such that the software now knows enough to train itself going forward. So perhaps you have or have had a picture on your profile of you. Maybe a friend has tagged you in a photo or tagged you on posts, right?
Right.
Facebook doesn't just know what you've posted. They know what you look like. They know how to identify you in other people's photos, even if you are not tagged, and therefore they know you have a relationship with them. And based on the words in the post around the photo, they can infer some things about your relationship, your political attitudes, your social justice attitudes, whatever.
Okay, but that's a lot of information that, quite frankly, if you look on what people are putting on Facebook on a daily basis, that's the stuff that people are putting up there on their own and willingly. What I'm getting at is we're assuming that the people who legally purchased the data are not using it nefariously. There are people who are not doing identity fraud or raiding our bank accounts or things like that. What they're doing is they're trying to, in one way, shape, or form, through advertisements or whatever, try to influence us. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's absolutely what they are doing. And they're selling it on. They're selling their insights on to other people as well. But when you think about that, realize that because apps can interact with the operating system on your phone or your computer, for instance. The information that has there and that has been sold includes exactly where you were at every interaction you ever made, and possibly exactly where you were the whole time that device was powered on, whether or not you were actively using the app, because after all, the app listens and it wants to give you notifications.
Okay, so I really don't have anything online that I concern myself with as far as someplace I shouldn't be or shouldn't go.
Right.
So if I've got nothing to worry about, why should I care about this?
You might not care about Facebook, although it's possible that you have exposed other people to machine learning algorithms in ways that they don't want to be exposed, and you did it inadvertently by including them in a picture you posted or similar actions. But let's take it beyond Facebook, because Facebook is just, as it were, the public face at the moment of this larger issue around data and its use. Google owns all kinds of stuff. Amazon, among other things, brings you Alexa. And so when you look at those services, or you think about what might happen now that these technologies are maturing, the possibilities going forward can give us pause. For instance, if you're one of the people who wears a smartwatch or a Fitbit, you might choose to upload your information to the cloud, and even more, you might choose to share it with friends.
Gotcha.
If, in fact, there becomes some amount of evidence that tracking people 24/7 on all of the biometric measurements that those devices or similar devices could capture, I suspect that there's going to be pressure from at least some people to force people to wear such things in order to reduce healthcare costs and for the common good. That raises, at least for me, some significant trade-off issues regarding social responsibility versus individual privacy and individual choice. And these kinds of dilemmas or challenges are coming on us fast.
Okay, so for those who, again, have nothing to hide, what do you suggest they do? And you mentioned Google just a minute ago, which mm-hmm. brings up another point. You know, people can go online and search various sites, and they can do it in the incognito mode.
Mm-hmm.
Does that still, is the incognito mode really incognito? Does it really remove or not track where you travel online, or is that just a placebo?
I have not been inside the code for that, but I would bet you a really good dinner that all it does is remove who the login name is that was using the account at the time.
Okay. So bottom line, because we're just about out of time here, bottom line, How worried should we be, or how angry should we be about what has happened with Facebook? And conversely, how should Facebook, I know this is a bloated question here, how should Facebook deal with this to win back some of the public's trust that it has lost?
I prefer to be proactive and to let the markets and competition work. By proactive, I mean use things like DuckDuckGo or other alternatives to Google for searching that do not keep a history of your searches. Stop using the apps that are given out by Amazon, by Facebook, and so on, and instead load multiple browsers on your phone or PC and use a different browser for each of those services and only for those services. That will create a certain kind of silence, a cone of silence around what you're doing, so that other information doesn't get scarfed up at the same time. And I am hearing about alternatives to Facebook and to other social media. I have not moved to one yet, but I'm listening carefully to what the technical community is telling me about what they really are inside.
Robin, a pleasure to have you on the program. We should mention once again, you're the managing director of Analytic Decisions Squared and also the author of Check Your Connections, How to Thrive in an Uncertain World. I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
My pleasure, Peter. Take care.
Dr. Robin Burke, managing director of Analytic Decisions Squared and the author of Check Your Connections, How to Thrive in an Uncertain World. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0454, and you'll find links to Robin's website and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, Bob DiRigo-Jones from Let's Be Fair joins us as a guest to talk about unnecessary license laws. Plus, we'll meet the woman who's behind the website and the business, Suck On That. It's a site that sells bamboo straws. Get your mind out of the gutter. Also, we have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, plus much more Stuff File news here on a program that is fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, the Roman Catholic Church says there's an increasing demand in exorcism, and 200 aspiring exorcists gathered in Rome for a week-long conference to learn the ropes. Classes included learning the difference between demonic possession and mental illness, the basics of African witchcraft, and every exacting detail of what to do to cast out demons with prayers read aloud in Latin. But the hit lecture was given by 89-year-old Cardinal Ernest Simeoni of Albania, who takes a more arm's-length approach to exorcism. He uses his mobile phone. They call me, and we speak, and that's how I do it, he said. Well, when Beelzebub pays you a visit, I guess we now have a new answer to the question, who are you going to call? Meanwhile, a search of a warehouse in Pilar, Argentina, turned up 5,460 kilograms of marijuana. That was a problem. It was a police warehouse where 6,000 kilos had been stored. Multiple officers claimed mice were responsible for the missing portion, but according to a judicial spokesman, mice don't eat weed. It's toxic to them. A lot of corpses would have been found in the warehouse if they had eaten it. 8 officers have lost their jobs, but a question remains for the court. Was the pot lost to expedience or negligence? Well, gee, I don't know. Which one do you call getting high on the job? You know, someone should check the vending machines at the police facility. If they are unusually empty, that could be a clue. And you can't buy this kind of publicity. How exciting does a stripper have to be to kill a guy? A man in the United Kingdom went to Thailand to enjoy himself, only to suffer a massive heart attack and die. 61-year-old James Downing fell over and died while watching women dancing naked at a popular strip club in Bangkok. Multiple women told police that Downing was sitting next to the stage and watching the strippers dancing. He had a foam baton and waved it in the air, like he just didn't care, when he suddenly fell to the floor. At first, people thought that Downing was drunk. Paramedics who arrived at the scene attempted to revive Downing, but their attempts were unsuccessful. He was declared dead at the scene. Well, you know, it's hard to get blood pumping toward the heart when most of it is heading in another direction. And by the way, if his family wants to have an open casket, the mortician will have to spend a lot of time working hard just to remove the smile from Downing's face. McDonald's drive-thrus are a chill place to be if three recent events are any indication. On March 17th, police officers called to a McDonald's restaurant in Okeechobee, Florida, found Darrell James Geller of West Palm Beach had passed out in his car while waiting in line. Geller was arrested for driving on a suspended license, because they always have suspended license in these stories. As a matter of fact, it's a crime for which he has been charged three previous times. But that's just the tip of the ice cream cone here. The Okeechobee News reported that in January, an Okeechobee woman was charged with DUI after passing out at a different area McDonald's drive-thru. And in December, a Texas man also received a DUI for nodding off in the line at that same McDonald's where the woman was passed out. Now, the question has to be asked, what is it with Florida McDonald's drive-thrus that put people to sleep? That's what I want to know. Meanwhile, an alleged robber found out the hard way that Halifax's Harbor Ferry is not an effective getaway vehicle. Halifax Regional Police responded to a robbery at a Tim Hortons in Dartmouth, where they say a male suspect claimed that he had a firearm and demanded money from staff. After the alleged heist, the suspect boarded a Halifax Transit ferry and attempted to make a getaway across the harbor. His plan was foiled when police contacted Halifax Transit and asked them to turn the ferry around. The man was arrested at the ferry terminal in Dartmouth without incident, and police were unable to find a firearm. You know, water transit is never a great escape plan if you don't have your own boat. That's why you don't hear about any gondola getaways in Venice. Exactly. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, German police say they rushed to an apartment in the southwestern town of Neustadt after receiving a call about suspected domestic abuse, only to barge in on a voluntary class on Japanese bondage. Neustadt police said a concerned neighbor called to report that two men were abusing a half-naked woman in a nearby apartment. When police arrived, they instead found the tenant, a teacher of Japanese shibari, instructing a couple in the basics of erotic bondage. In a statement headlined 50 Shades of Neustadt, police said the couple was well and in good mood when they inquired about their situation. They even offered to have the officers participate in the class, but police politely declined. Well, I can understand why they'd ask the cops to participate. I mean, they already come equipped with their own handcuffs. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Each week, we get to hear Bob DiRigo Jones with his Let's Be Fair segments. On last week's program, he shared with us the idea of getting rid of some of the unnecessary license laws that permeate through the United States. I just had to have Bob on to talk about this in greater detail. But before we get to that, let me refresh your memory with a little bit of last week's segment, just in case you forgot from last week, or heaven forbid, you didn't listen to last week's show. Here we go.
Would you believe that in the state of Nebraska, you need more training to massage a horse than a human? It's true. If you rub down a horse without a license, you could spend 4 years in jail. And in Michigan, it's illegal to shampoo hair for someone outside your family without a cosmetology license. Getting that license requires a 2-year apprenticeship or 1,500 hours of training. That's the same number of hours of training the Federal Aviation Authority requires for airline pilots. Let's be fair, it's time to fix this system. When a license isn't needed to protect public health, it can simply act as a barrier for people who need jobs. Among those hurt by these laws are military families, who often move from state to state and find that a non-military spouse can no longer work without spending months getting a new license. To generate more awareness of this problem, we're collecting examples of unneeded licensing laws. If you have an example, send it to us at centerforamericatv.org.
And now you're up to date. So, Bob is back on with us. He joins us on the line via Skype from Michigan. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Peter. Nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk with you again. As we mentioned, last week's show, you had this one about unnecessary licensing laws, and I thought we need to delve into this deeper. Now, the one that we just played featured things like you have to get training to massage a horse.
Yes, it sounds bizarre, but it's true.
Now, are there a lot of laws like this that make no sense that need to be removed?
There really are. There are, and it all is so arbitrary, and that's one of the problems with licensing laws. Is you can move from Detroit to Las Vegas and have totally different requirements for doing very mundane things like washing windows or shampooing hair or any number of things. Most states require licenses to do anywhere from about 200 to 300 different jobs. So it makes it very difficult for people to move around. Like we mentioned, people in military families whose one spouse is in the military and the other one moves along with the spouse and has to find work if they want to work. You may have much tougher requirements in the state you move to, and it makes it very difficult for the spouses. It's very unfair.
Now, in the segment we had, it, as you just alluded to also, it's illegal to shampoo hair in Michigan without a license for someone outside of your family. Now, I'm just wondering, is there a caveat in that somewhere? For instance, what if I shampooed someone else's hair that wasn't in my family, but I did not charge them? Am I still breaking the law?
Well, if you didn't charge them, you probably wouldn't be breaking the law, because this is all intended to protect those who have already gone to school and want to keep their profession at a certain level of status so that people have to come to them for their services, and therefore it's a reliable income. It's all about the money. It's all about following the dollars. And, that's a very interesting one. I was just reading here the proposed law in Michigan that would reduce the number of hours that somebody has to go through to get a license to shampoo hair would go down from 1,500 hours to 350 hours. So somebody would still have to go to school for 350 hours before they could shampoo somebody's hair as part of their living.
Now, as ridiculous as that law sounds on the surface, I think you also just touched on a reason as to why that law does exist. It's to protect those who have gone through the proper steps to maintain and gain a license and are now applying their livelihood. You just don't want anybody walking off the street and starting up a hair salon in their basement, so to speak, and usurping what those have done with a license in the past.
Right. But this little quiz that I think your listeners will find both amusing and enlightening kind of illustrates the arbitrariness of licensing laws and the silliness. Now, listen to this. Which of these people must do the most to fulfill the occupational requirements imposed by the state of Michigan for getting a license? A chef who prepares your food, the auto mechanic who installs your brakes, the EMT who can save your life, a painter who makes your house look nice, an airline pilot who flies you to see your family or friends, or the barber who simply cuts your hair. Now, it's a wide range of kind of occupations, from somebody that does something very important about preparing your food down to somebody who cuts your hair.
I'm going to guess only because you asked the question, and you're looking for what are ridiculous rules and regulations. I'm going to guess it's the painter.
Well, okay. That the painter falls somewhere kind of in the middle. This was surprising to me. Now, the barbers, along the lines of people that shampoo hair, have to complete 1,800 hours of training. Commercial jet pilots regulated by the federal government need only 1,500 hours of instruction. That sounds odd. Painters have to have 60 hours of class time. An EMT, only 30 to 45 hours of training. A mechanic who is going to work on your brakes and could control whether you can stop when you need to, only requires 6 hours of training. And a chef who has so much influence about whether the food you eat is going to be safe needs 0 hours of mandatory training.
Wow.
And that could vary greatly from state to state, too. I was reading a story about a woman who was a makeup artist. She trained in California, where the movie industry is very big, obviously, and came back to Michigan, my home state here, where she grew up. And we had some tax incentives that lured movie production crews here for a while. Those dried up, and her work dried up when the movies stopped coming here to film. So she needed to branch off into going into salons and do makeup there. But she found that even with all her training in Hollywood and makeup artistry, she couldn't get a job because she didn't have the license. And she would have had to go back to school at an enormous cost to herself and time. And she talked about how it's just it's hard for her now to decide whether she's going to stay in Michigan or move back to place like California or Las Vegas.
Now, it's only been a week since we played the segment, and you play it here on this program and in other places as well. But you were asking for people to come up with similar laws that are seemingly on the surface are slightly ridiculous when it comes to licensing laws. Have you received any more since you recorded that segment?
Yes, we got one that you may remember. Somebody called in with this. I don't know, maybe they heard our show a long time ago, but a while ago we talked about a community. And here's another thing. It's not just states that require licensing laws. A lot of cities, big cities, small cities, will require their own licensing. And one city wanted to impose licensing requirements on kids who mowed lawns in the summer. So you've got, an enterprising young 13-year-old wants to go around the neighborhood and mow lawns and make some money. And this city was going to require them to get an occupational license. That was one that we got from a couple people. And I thought, how absurd. But then again, it was brought by an adult who did this for a living and didn't want the competition. So these licensing laws are usually there to protect somebody who already has the occupation and the license and doesn't want the competition.
Well, every year we hear of stories similar to that one, jobs that kids normally do. Every year, somewhere in North America, so it's not just the United States, it's also in Canada, somewhere in North America, somebody will complain about, and it's usually a little girl, opening a lemonade stand.
I knew you were going to say that, and it's so true. It is. It's like clockwork. You can plant somewhere in America that somebody's going to complain about some little kid selling lemonade, and it never fails, and usually the public outcry is so bad that the community will back down, but it's just one of those things that usually it's a restaurant. Here's another example. There's people that live on a golf course, and the kids would go out in the woods who lived in the area and get golf balls and go try to sell them in the middle of the street if there was like a little berm there and make a little extra money. And the kids were told to scram because the golf course also sold used golf balls, and they didn't want the competition. Now, they weren't licensed, but it's the same principle. It all comes down to who can make the most money.
Well, we have just less than a minute here. I just want to know, is there anybody, you're collecting these unnecessary license laws. Is there anybody, besides you talking about it, who's trying to do anything to get some of these laws removed?
Yes, as a matter of fact, there is. There's an organization called the Institute for Justice that has a website, ij.org. It lists all the states, all the licensing requirements that each state has. You can compare them. I was going through this looking at, for a bartender, how many states require licensing for a bartender, and you can just click on the link, and it shows you 13 states So if you live in Michigan, you don't have to be licensed to be a bartender. But if you're in Washington or Oregon or Louisiana, you do. So who can figure? It's almost a crapshoot.
Bob, it's always a joy to have you on the program. It's now, as you mentioned to me off air, almost 20 years or the 20th anniversary coming up of the Wacky Warning Label Contest. My time has flown, and the warning labels seem to be coming just as wacky as they were 20 years ago. But it's always a pleasure to have you on the program, sir. I thank you for being on the show with us once again.
Thank you, Peter. Talk to you next time.
Bob DiRigo-Jones, radio host and author of Remove the Child Before Folding, 101 Stupidest, Silliest, Wackiest Warning Labels Ever. You can visit my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0454, and you'll find links to Bob's website. And coming up right now, this week's edition of Let's Be Fair. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. College students across America will soon be completing exams and turning their focus to summer jobs. And this year, there's good news out of Washington for students seeking internships. The U.S. Department of Labor has established new rules for 2018 that make it easier for employers who want to provide internships. These new guidelines replace more restrictive rules put in place by the Obama administration that forced job providers to eliminate unpaid internships in recent years. Under the new rules, employers in the private sector will have more flexibility to create unpaid internships as long as they meet certain criteria aimed at making sure the work experience is educational. Let's be fair, unpaid internships aren't for everyone, but for thousands of college students, they offer the best way to get real-life experience that could lead to a paying job after graduation. Because of the recent rule changes, these kinds of opportunities will be available again this summer. Learn more at centerforamericatv.org.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Tessa Polder, who has a company called Suck On That, that makes bamboo straws. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way, but I got one more Stuff File news story I want to share with you. But before we get to that, just want to mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. It's available, as I keep telling you, and like the title says, within the pages you'll find some of my celebrity encounters with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer, Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner, Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar, a host of TV icons like Buddy Ebsen, Bob Denver, Dick Van Patten, Gary Coleman, and the ever-popular Much, Much More, plus two guys who left their footprints up on the moon. So check it out. It's available at Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website, which is BearManorMedia.com. And you'll find links to find the book at our website at TheStuffFile.com. So buy the book. What are you waiting for? Now, let's get back to the stuff. A worker on board a food truck in New Orleans fired a single gunshot at a man who was trying to rob the truck. Police say the worker recognized the attacker as the same person who robbed the truck a week earlier. The latest attack happened at around 9 p.m. Police say the truck was closed for business for the day when the worker saw a man who was approaching. According to police, the worker recognized the man from a robbery 1 week earlier. As the robber approached, police say the worker locked the doors of the truck. But police say the robber attempted to open a door and then jumped on the hood of the truck while aiming a gun toward the worker. That's when the worker fired a single gunshot. There's no word on whether the robber was hit, but police say he was able to run from the scene. You know, robbing the same place each week is not the same as getting a regular paycheck. That's just another lazy criminal who now potentially has an extra opening on his body. You know, I also could have made him the idiot of the day, but I did not. That comes later. Stick around for it. In the meantime, let's get to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? When you drink from a plastic straw, are you aware of the fact that the straw will have a longer lifespan than a human? That's something Tessa Polder is very aware of. She runs a company called Suck On That, which makes bamboo straws in Cambodia. Tessa joins us on the line right now via Skype from Cambodia. Hi, Tessa.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, you seem to be in the forefront of this because just recently in the UK, Starbucks and McDonald's are getting out of the plastic straws and stir stick business. So you're ahead of the curve on this. How did this business come to be from your perspective?
So basically, I was already living in Cambodia. I was working for a fair trade company, and living here, I was just very much confronted by how much plastic waste is around us, because in Cambodia, the plastic waste management system is quite undeveloped. So it was really when I was walking down the beach here that it was the turning point for me. I saw a lot of plastic straws lying around on the ground, and that's when I thought to myself, that's very unnecessary. I have to do something about it. I'd already heard about bamboo straws, so I thought I'd make it my mission to start encouraging businesses and individuals to start using these bamboo straws instead of plastic.
What were you doing before you started your business?
So, as I mentioned, I was here in Cambodia working for this fair trade organization. I did that for 7 months, and before that, I was studying my master's in the UK.
Ah, so obviously, this is something that is near and dear to your heart. Was it a difficult process to start your business? You started this business in 2017. So was it a difficult process to start up?
Actually, it's gone very naturally. The idea came to me around last year in the summer. And from there, I just began building it up slowly. I didn't know where it would take me. I didn't think it would become a business. I thought it was just going to be something I was doing on the side. But everything seemed to be going so smoothly, and there was a lot of interest. So I decided it should be my full-time thing. And yeah, it's grown quite well.
Bamboo straws are reusable. How many times can you reuse it?
I'd like to say at least 50 times, but my personal straw has been going much longer than that. So it also depends on how well you treat your bamboo straw.
Is there a difficulty in getting people's mindset around the idea that something like a bamboo straw is something that you can reuse? Is that any kind of problem or hurdle to get over?
Some people are very open to the idea. They don't seem to mind it. And then there are others that are concerned about the hygiene. They don't like the idea that someone else has used the bamboo straw before them. But if you think about it, it's the same concept with cutlery or glass. Anything that you would use in a restaurant has already been used by someone else. So it's just a matter of making sure that it's cleaned properly, which should be done and is easy to do.
Primarily, who is your market? Are you looking at selling to individuals, or are you looking at selling to places like restaurants, places that serve people?
So initially, I wanted to just target restaurants, cafes, and bars here in Cambodia, because I wanted to just rule out any option of the customer using a plastic straw. But now I've also expanded to selling through retail avenues, so that it becomes available in shops as well. So, yeah, I'm targeting both retail and restaurants and cafes.
And percentage-wise, who is your biggest customer from that regard? Is it the individual or still the food services industry?
I think it's about equal, yes. More or less equal.
You're selling these in Cambodia. How about being further afield? You have your website, which is suckonthat.com. Are you selling beyond the shores of where you are?
Yes, slowly but surely. It is spreading globally. And at the moment, through my ties with the Netherlands, I do have the straws available in some shops. And some cafes are also starting to use them. And another shop in France. So there is, yeah, a global demand is starting.
We should mention you're originally from the Netherlands, correct?
Yes, I am originally from the Netherlands, but I grew up in many different places.
How about on this side of the Atlantic in North America? Are you seeing any sales in this market, or is that something you're looking forward to in the future?
Definitely looking forward to that in the future, but as of yet, I have not reached that market. But yes, one step at a time.
And what's when you tell people that this is what you're doing, You know, there are various kinds of people. There are those who are environmentally conscious and are fully aware of what straws are doing to the environment. And there are those who are oblivious of this idea. When you talk to people generally and you tell them this is what you do, what's the reaction like?
Yes, as you mentioned, it depends on the perspective of the person. Some people are very excited about it. They think it's a great idea, especially the fact that they're handmade in Cambodia. They like the background story, the fact that it is changing the lives of villagers in remote areas. And other people, they're not very convinced about the bamboo straws. But generally, I think it's a very positive reaction that I'm getting.
As I mentioned, in the UK, Starbucks and McDonald's are getting rid of plastic straws. They're going the paper route. There is a law that's going to go into force next year in the UK that will eliminate plastic straws. Besides restaurants, like you suggested you've used as customers in your current model, have you looked at any chain locations besides individual restaurants, like a Starbucks or a McDonald's?
At the moment, the capacity would be too low to be able to handle a big chain like that. So at the moment, I'm just focusing on smaller businesses.
How much do they sell for and how many to a package?
In a pack, there are 10 straws and the packet is made by a fair trade company. So it's ethical and supports handicapped people. Here in Cambodia, that sells for $14. Here in Cambodia, it will differ across the world because of other costs that will be added to it.
And do you, as I said, you're hoping to expand and move on to other shores like ours. Do you have any sales in North America yet?
Not yet, no.
Where are you right now in terms of the where you wanted to be when you first came up with this idea last year of starting this business? Are you hitting the goals you want to hit? Are you ahead or behind what?
I think I am hitting the goals that I wanted to hit. But when I started, I really didn't know where it would take me. I wasn't sure what to expect. I was just trying it out. So I didn't really have a fixed goal in mind, but I'm definitely exceeding my expectations. So that's really great.
You mentioned how excited some people are about your product, the fact that there are many people who are very environmentally conscious. What about on the other end of things? You say you're using local workmanship and fair trade dealings. It must be exciting for the people who are working that you started this business.
Yes, they are very enthusiastic about the project. It does provide them with an extra income that they wouldn't have had otherwise and an opportunity to improve their living standards. So they are really happy to be on board.
You operate in remote areas and provide these jobs. Since they are remote areas, how do you go about finding them?
I had a contact. I was working with an NGO and he put me in touch with a community. He felt like there was a really strong need to help this community because they are living in very poor conditions and job opportunities are very limited. So through this connection, I managed to get in touch with the community and set up the project there. But otherwise, it would have been impossible to find them because, yeah, it is very remote and I don't speak the language fluently. So there are a lot of barriers.
As you say, you're not big enough right now to do things like have clients like McDonald's or Starbucks, but in your plan of plans, how big do you think this business can be?
I think it has the potential to become very big, but I do just need to build it up slowly. I think that is very important.
Well, it's a very noble and interesting endeavor that you've embarked on. The company is called Suck On That. People can check the website, suckonthat.com. Tessa, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Okay, thank you very much.
Tessa Polder, who runs a bamboo straw company in Cambodia called Suck On That. You can visit my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0454, and you'll find links to Tessa's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
After a traffic collision, 25-year-old Xavier Inocencio Moran of Royal Palm Beach, Florida, told the investigating sheriff's deputy that the other driver had cut him off, and he could prove it. Moran had a dash cam that always records the scene through his windshield, and he signed a release allowing the deputy to take the camera's memory chip and download it to see what happened. The deputy reviewed the video from the beginning. Hours before the crash, Moran had parked in front of a beauty supply store and, the deputy says, inadvertently recorded himself using a baseball bat to break the glass front door of the business and then beat on the safe inside in an attempt to get it open. The deputy arrested Moran for burglary. Now, why? Oh, why? If you're going to hand over dashcam video to prove someone else cut you off in an accident, would you not stop to realize that any crimes you committed earlier would also be on said footage? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0454. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0454. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Well, you weren't literally with him. Well, maybe you were, but I don't see how. I mean, he does record these in advance, you know, and okay, maybe you did listen with him. Who am I to call you a liar? And personally, I've never met the guy, and I'm not in a hurry to either.